Welcome to Blether Together, brought to you by Farmstrong Scotland. I'm your host, Sarah Stephen, and together we'll be travelling across Scotland to chat to farmers and crofters to learn more about them, their businesses, challenges, and the positive steps they take to manage their well-being. Our thanks go to NFU Mutual Charitable Trust for supporting the podcast series and to our founding funders, Movember and the Royal Highland Agricultural Society of Scotland. Rory Christie is a partner in the Dury Farming Company Limited, a dairy and piggery that he runs with his brother Gregor in Wigtonshire. The family business has seen many ups and downs over the years, with significant challenges impacting Rory. In our podcast today, we find out more about the business, the stress he has felt over the years, and how he manages it. Rory, welcome to Blether Together. Thank you very much for joining us.
Hello, Sarah, and thank you for having me. Good to see you.
Right, Rory, let's kick it off with you telling us a little bit about yourself and what you do. Paint a picture of life at Dury Farming Company in southwest Scotland.
Thank you, Sarah. Yeah, okay, so first and foremost, I'm a dairy farmer. I now farm with my brother. We have specialised fields, I guess. Gregor is a very able pig keeper. I look after dairy cows and the land. We've been in business 70 years this year, and Gregor and I inherited some and bought some of the business in about 2015 to take control between the two of us. So we have pastoral dairy cows, 1,100 of them, and we hope to be about 1,250 cows next May. They're outside grazing for 270 to 300 days a year, much like you would see in Cornwall or South Wales or Southern Ireland or New Zealand. And our pigs are the opposite. They're indoor pigs and they are modelled on a Danish model. So in both circumstances, we decided to build a business or copy those that were the most competitive in the world. The Danish are the most competitive pig farmers. They are the people who compete against the Brits. And so we need to be able to be as good as them. So rather than come up with the idea, we just copied them. And the same with, in many ways, the same with the dairy, but for different reasons. On a day-to-day basis at the moment, just finished calving, started breeding. We're spring block calvers, meaning that we calve 1,100 cows in a very, very short window in February and March. So a bit like lambing, it's really fast and furious. We're already back into breeding. The piggery is again the opposite. It's three-week batch system and everything is very regular, done to routine and about extreme attention to detail and high output. Equally, the dairy is about attention to detail and output. Other than that, I head up some organisations. I'm founding chairman of the Milk Supply Association, which is a small cooperative with dairy producer organisation status, who we have 104 members, I think. They all supply the factory in Stranraer that is owned by Lactalis and makes Galloway cheddar, among other things. And our pigs go to Scotlean, a small cooperative, a marketing cooperative that Gregor is a board member of. Me and my board at the MSA, we look after the terms and conditions for those farmers in the south of Scotland. And other than that, I'm also, this year I will be chairman. I'm currently vice chairman of SOS. That's the organisation that enables cooperation in the food supply chain and collaboration. We try to solve problems by helping people work better together. This year, joined the South of Scotland Enterprise board. So I'm a newbie there. I'm learning my way, learning about being a public servant, which is very different to the private sector that I've operated in for a long time. And I'm married with two kids. Rachel, my wife, works for the police and has done for over 30 years in administration. Both my girls are now, well, Tilly finished school today. It's our last exam. She was doing business hire, actually. So then she's going off to Edinburgh to study rural business management, SRUC, and Anna's already in Newcastle doing a degree in agriculture. So they took us both by surprise. We did not expect them to go into agriculture, but that's good because they're both very clever, bright young people, and that's what agriculture needs. So I maybe I'll have to reconsider my retirement plan, but we'll see what happens.
You're quoted on your website saying that farming really matters. It is what we do to give us purpose. Was farming always going to be the career for you? When did you know that's what you wanted to do?
I don't really know when I knew I wanted to do it. I did want to be, as I said in one interview before, an astronaut and an RAF pilot and all things that are fast and furious. My father never ever said you have to be a farmer, but I did watch him like all children do, I guess. And I was the oldest sibling. I just seemed to be quite a tough childhood in many ways. My mum and dad didn't get on very well. So education, I wasn't, you know, I got an HND, a diploma at Edinburgh. Through my schooling years, things were quite challenging. So I might have otherwise done something differently, but luckily, extremely luckily, I'm extremely privileged. We have a farming business that I could come back to. And so I did, and I seemed to have a natural want to be a leader. So I fell into those positions of leading the farming business. I did plenty of practical farming along the way. I'm very lucky. I worked under some very good people who taught me how to farm. And that's how I got to where I am, I guess. Without it, there is no purpose. There is no purpose. It drives everything I do.
You've mentioned your father and your mother, but it was your grandfather Henry that started the business back in the 1940s, and you've touched upon that a little bit. But your grandfather Henry, he started the business back in the 1940s, and by all accounts, he was a very enterprising and innovative character. Tell us a bit about what he created and his approach and your memories of that.
Well, he was, as with all grandpas, I guess, an older guy by the time I came along, but he was your classic entrepreneurial dictator. He was very enterprising. He was educated. He came from a tenanted hill farm in Luss, Loch Lomond. I think there were seven of them. He was Duxford at Alexandra Academy and then went to Glasgow and got a degree in agriculture and then various postgrads at Auchincruith and Hannah. Anyway, he went into farming and he specialised in recovering ailing estates. And for that recovery, he would take a small share of the profit. Which he did that repetitively, did it here in Wiccanshire under the, he worked for the farm, the Maxwell family who owned Maynooth Estate. And anyway, he ended up buying some of that. And he specialised in, I suppose, intensive livestock and pigs in particular and dairy. And he built a huge business based on pork production from whey, which was gathered from all the local creameries, and dairy production from because we are in a very early area. It's a mild climate in the west coast of Scotland. He actually grew lots of potatoes as well and things like that, but that market went by the wayside. And he was one of the first broiler chicken farmers in the country. It was only successful because he had the ultimate project manager, which was my father. That combination, plus a government and people that wanted food, the commercial environment was extremely different from what it is now. Basically, you give an entrepreneurial man a good economic climate and he turned it into cash and land. And he had a project manager, my father oversaw everything. And they were just, you've got to understand, they were just building and building and building every year for 30 years. And we did everything ourselves. You know, we had all our own tradesmen and all their own machinery, etc.
Growing up, were you conscious of that success? Were you aware that it was a very successful business?
Strangely, I think, yes. I knew we were different from many others. It's like farming has caught up with us a wee bit because we were much bigger than most at the time. And Grandpa certainly had a reputation. He was slightly fearsome, but he was also, he could think differently and he solved problems. But he also did lots for other people as well. You know, he involved himself in the National Farmers Union, the Milk Marketing Board, and he always never forgot his roots of where he came from, which is very much west coast of Scotland. And actually, you know, he came from a hill farm. Goodness knows why, he liked sheep. Blackface sheep, I guess. Yeah, he was always pretty. I mean, he was just my grandpa before he was anything else. And my grandparents were hugely influential in my life. They were a stable force. So it's a stable place to be. He was great, but he wouldn't make my father's life easy at all. You know, he would be very, extremely demanding. And my father would be in a position where he had an extremely demanding father, then a probably, he might say, extremely demanding son. So Dad was the ultimate diplomat.
You've touched upon it there in terms of farming is all about succession and sometimes working with other members of your family, be it a father figure or a sibling. And you work in a very substantial enterprise with your brother Gregor. So what are your top tips for working with a sibling and what are the secrets of a successful relationship?
Well, maybe we're just lucky, but we have two enterprises that we specialise in and we don't interfere with each other's, how those operations are run. Greg is very good at what he does, so I don't need to. We have got very good, straightforward governance. Everything is done to budget. We monitor cash and actual cash fee budget. And then we meet every month without fail. We have a very important person, Alan Stannett, who has been our farm business manager, but I guess mentor to us both for the last 20 years. And Alan helped us put in place that governance. We meet every month without fail. We go through the cash, we have an agenda, we talk about whatever's coming up. And if there's difficult stuff to talk about, we talk about that too. And we're now talking about, it took us 10 years to do my father's succession, which we did very successfully. That's what I think anyway. And, you know, we had to buy out sisters and stepmother and uncles and non-family shareholders. We did all that by talking. and having somebody who could help us hold the emotional line. It's a funny thing, shares have always been talked about. We have a limited company with a shareholding, and from the minute my grandfather started the business, he was on with trying to buy out other shareholders. And so there's always been an active discussion about shareholding, opposed to necessarily succession, and the value of shares and how they are to be valued and how we pass it on. And we were very relatively clear that if the shareholding get too dissipated, then the company would probably fail. So we always had that discussion. Involved Alan, we had met him through doing a plan in the Succeed group. And, you know, we didn't take advice. Dad and Grandpa didn't need advice. They're aware of it. They really, and in many ways they didn't. They had advisors, but they didn't have a person like you get in a modern business, which is a sort of non-executive chairman or a bit a farm business consultant. But Alan uniquely had, was a pig farmer and had ran big estates. He was the factor of Buccleuch, which is a very big job. So Alan had quite a key skill set that made him acceptable in many ways. And he came along and we moved from sort of double entry ledgers to electronic bookkeeping and more computer-based business analysis, I guess. And that just started the ball rolling. And once we started talking, we didn't stop. We had some pretty big rows. Alan's had to oversee some wildness, but we don't really mind that kind of behaviour. Can lose our temper, but not hold a grudge.
So you've honed your conflict resolution well.
You might say that, but it's easy nowadays, really. And Greg and I just continue to follow that pattern. We are worried, we're always worried about what comes next, because now we've sorted it out for Dad, we've got our own selves to set out, and we have no clarity at all at the moment about what our kids would do or want to do. And we have sitting on a huge land asset, and we've got to think about how we're going to continue that. Or not. We're busy on that discussion. It'll take a long time. If it takes 10 years, that's good, because good ideas come over a long period of time.
Well, it's great to hear that your daughters are keen to go into the industry, at least.
Yeah. I wouldn't ask them to come and work here unless they want to. But and if I don't want them to come back here, certainly not straight away. They need to go and get some worldly experience. There's an opportunity there that they might be involved. I can't actually remember the question you asked me.
We're just speaking about how you deal with, you know, working very closely alongside your brother. So we've touched upon that, and obviously it's been good to understand that it's not all plain sailing.
Absolutely not. No, it never is. We have dinner often on a Sunday night together, and I think that helps because it keeps us in touch, because sometimes we don't see that much of each other through the week, especially if I'm away or he's away. So we try to have dinner probably twice a month as a family, and that's always fun. Though the teenagers are getting a bit boring at the moment because they sit on their phones and we're all just embarrassing parents.
That's the way of the world at the moment, sadly.
That seems to be.
I mean, you're involved with numerous organisations, committees, all with a focus on improving good practice, governance, and ensuring farmers get the best price for their product. And for you, it's been a focus on the sort of dairy sector mostly. Why was getting involved so important to you?
Well, the truth of it is it wasn't. I'd actually said I would never be involved because I saw my father and grandfather spend a huge amount of time, and they're always telling me, you mustn't take your eye off the ball, you mustn't take your eye off the ball, you know, don't let them suck you in. And our business went into absolute decline for a spell in the 90s and early noughties, and we were in quite deep financial trouble just really when Greg and I came home in around that time. So I was, for a wee while, sort of convinced that half of that bother was that they'd taken their eye off the ball. As it turns out, they hadn't. It was just change, and change is sometimes difficult. Generational change at the same time as the commercial environment changed. And so, anyway, eventually, having said that I wouldn't be involved, I had got myself onto what was called the Direct Farm Supply Committee at the factory in Stranraer. You see, the factory in Stranraer, well, it's been very important to what we've always done. It was the Galloway Creamery. It was part of where we got our way from for our big business, and then the factory closed and my father was part of a team of people, farmers, who had it reopened in 1995, and the farmers owned 20% of the business, and there were other shareholders, but then that some of the shareholders started to sell out and they sold to a French firm like Lactalis. And eventually, because so many of the shareholders in the Farmers Creamery Cooperative had either died or retired, there wasn't a majority vote who wanted to retain their shares, and they sold out. So the farmers sold their 20% holding, and there was no farmer influence in that factory anymore. The factory had started up a sort of communication body, a farmer committee. And I quickly realised that they were just puppets, or set up to meet the CSR need of the factory. And at the same time, just as that was getting going, NFU, there's always been strife in dairy. Dairy's endless. It's full of strife from from the day it was ever invented. And a guy called Jimmy Mitchell, who was chairman of NFU Milk Committee at the time, and held a meeting where all the representatives of dairy farmers were to come to and leave their baggage behind. We weren't allowed to talk about what had gone before, we could only talk about what came after. And it was very successful, and that caught me. And I started doing stuff for the NFU. And there was quite an inspirational bunch at the union at the time. James Withers was chairman, was chief executive. I then got trapped, and I started to do stuff for NFU. And in particular, I concentrated on contract legislation and producer organisations, or producer representation, professionalising what farmers do. And I was lucky to learn.
You got sucked in.
I got sucked in. Yeah, sucked in, basically. So I've been sucked in ever since. I've moved away a wee bit from the union. I've stayed a specialist for them, I guess, on contract legislation. But then I get, because it was SOS that helped me set up the Milk Supply Association, that took it from that puppet body to a genuine representation body that had the mandate of the suppliers. It was them that helped me, and I've been with them ever since. I will be chairman of the organisation this year, and hopefully it will go through a period of change and growth and diversification to make it more sustainable for the long term. I will be part of that big change process at SOS over the next 5 years.
If you could change one thing about the industry, what would it be?
What our industry needs is competition in the milk field. There is not enough diversity of processors in Scotland. It needs milk field competition. Our industry has got huge potential to grow and to deliver the most fantastic, environmentally sound dairy produce that could help feed our own nation and others in the world. So if I could change anything, it would be to plonk a big brand new factory with lots of demand in the middle of Scotland. But I would make it cooperatively owned. So I would like to overcome farmers' inability or perceived inability to cooperate, to overcome their fears, get them to stand together and work together for a better future.
How do you define success?
Meaningful progress is more important than success. Because success is hard to come by and comes in many forms. As long as you're making meaningful progress and have purpose, you don't need success or happiness. Purpose is much more important than happiness, and meaningful progress is much more important than success. Because success is a horizon event, and happiness is something you chase. And neither. You want to have meaningful progress continually. Go through lots of gateways of success. I'm an achiever. I want to be technically brilliant dairy farmer. I want to make cash surplus. I want to be successful in my family as well as my business. And I want to do it by helping other people be successful.
Well, we're very grateful because today you've come to speak to us about what you do, but also about stress and stress management. I've asked you how you define success. How do you define stress?
In my case, anger and upset stomach, mostly. Anxiety, I guess. I don't really recognise it that well, but there's no doubt that's what it is. I get short-tempered and I will take it out on people mostly close to me. I don't particularly do, in a work environment often, I don't do small talk. I can't be bothered with it. So stress is, I just become, the symptom that displaces me, I just become agitated, I guess. Less tolerant. When you see me being less tolerant, it means I'm under stress. People telling me I'm wrong about something when I know I'm right. People who I believe are not being genuine or fair or greedy. People who I can get extremely stressed when dealing, negotiating milk price if I feel that we're being reasonable and others aren't. So injustice, basically. Financial stress. I'm probably just very used to that and I handle it fairly well nowadays. But this spring's been very, very difficult, very stressful because we have so many eggs in one basket, having so many cows at a short time, and the weather has been very difficult and still is difficult. It's not dry by any means yet. So as we approach calving all these cows, we've got to get them back in calving. We've got to hit peak milk yield all in and around the 1st of May, and we'll now be running probably two litres behind where we should be, which that just turns into £250,000 of income just like that. So the weather has a really big effect on us.
How do you cope with stress and anxiety?
Once I decided that I needed to do something about it, I've done lots of things. Exercise is a great helper. I did an awful lot of exercise for a long time. I stopped drinking altogether for 3 years. Alcohol doesn't help me at all. Our society is so imbued in it. Socially, it's almost necessary to...
Are you still teetotal?
No. If somebody's in a stress situation, alcohol does not help. And that exercise absolutely does. Time away from the farm is probably the best thing. And a lot of the off-farm work I do helps with that because it allows me to use my creative bit of my brain opposed to being at the coalface and worrying about the minutia. The absolutely most important thing about managing stress is being able to maintain perspective. You have to be able to maintain perspective. So getting off the farm gives me perspective. Dealing with bigger problems or industry-wide problems allows me to do some good and use my brain in a positive manner. So everybody has a bit of a creative side and you need to allow that to flourish and that will help you manage your stress. Listening to music helps me. When I was running for a long time, I've unfortunately got a knackered knee now, so I can't run, but listening to music I find is helpful. I try to walk now. So exercise, get off the farm, have perspective. They're the key things for me. Rest and recuperation, they call it, is it not?
R&R. Of course, everybody needs R&R. I mean, you come across as a very single-minded person who knows their own mind.
I've spent a great deal of time knowing my mind.
You've spent a great deal of time honing that. But do you talk to somebody? Who do you turn to when you're stuck?
Done lots of life coaching. I've had coaches, particularly a lady called Christine Miller, who helped me during the second part of the Rural Leadership Programme called Harvest to Growth. There only has been two intakes, I think, pilot and then the one we did. And she certainly helped me a lot. She wasn't a therapist in any way, as she would quite often tell me, but she gave me methods and how to have a way to optimise the person you are. So I did spend a lot of time in self-exploration. I will use a counsellor. I'm seeing somebody at the moment because I wasn't enjoying the stress and I could see that I needed to deal with that. You know, it's just like cycling or running or whatever. You've got to look after your brain as well as your legs or your heart. I've a lot of responsibility more than ever before with the roles that I hold, as well as the farming operation and trying to understand the future. So I need to be in tip-top condition. I envisage a lot of change at SUS, which I have to, you know, I'll be responsible as the chairperson for that. So you just got to hone the machine, basically.
How did you make that decision to open up? Was it an easy decision to open up to somebody?
I'm not sure. My mother always said that, you know, whatever happens, you must talk. That's kind of a gift she left me. So she's said that, you know, my mother and father didn't get on very well and that my father wouldn't talk. Well, there was many issues there, but I stuck, and so talking has always been important. It's very difficult, especially in farming, where you come home and you're at work anyway. And so if I just burden Rachel, I'd just be moaning. And what I was finding is I was moaning to people. I was moaning to Rachel. I was moaning to my super secretary, Lindsay, that comes to see me. And to my agronomist, I was moaning to him. And my agronomist is burdened with every other family visit, moaning to him as well, because we're all in the same boat. And so I thought, this is no good. I need to stop moaning. I'll get some help here, get a few tips. So I've had a couple of appointments of late, and I'll just go to this particular person. I think I'll just go to on and off over time as I need her. And there's no big problem, really. There's not some huge issue that I'm dealing with. It's just having somebody to help me get perspective on some of the bigger challenges I've got. So, yeah, that's what I do.
But you don't see yourself as alone. You know this must, you know...
No.
In the industry.
No. Leadership is lonely. There's absolutely no doubt about it. And anybody that leads, whatever they lead, when you're in that position of... I don't know how to describe it. I thought about this last night, that you take risk and you're never sure if it's going to be right. Is this the right thing to do? Well, there is nobody else can help you with that. So that's lonely. And so much of what we've done on the farm and in some of the stuff I've done in dairy as well, you know, when I've been a lone voice, some people would consider me radical. I don't really think I am. I just sometimes I see vision easily and cut through a lot of the noise. So therefore it gives me ability to see what needs done before others, and that puts me alone because you might not have support. So you have to have determination. My father told me that a long time ago, that more than anything, if I wanted to achieve, I had to be extremely determined, more determined than everybody else around about me. So therefore you have to be able to handle taking decisions by yourself and not knowing if you're right and just believing in yourself that you're right. So all of that can be lonely. And sometimes these things are difficult to explain to others, you know, and they just think, you know, I'm saying it on a national podcast, maybe some people will just think I'm a twat, but maybe not. You can't, they're difficult things to sometimes explain, and if you're at home, you want to actually stop thinking about it and try and shut down, and so you don't want to have to reopen that discussion with your wife. because what's you're just continuing the pain or the worry. So that's the fact. What you want to do is come home and get away from it. And in the farm, that's really difficult. Really difficult.
Yeah, I think you've just broken down that perception, because the perception is, the stereotypical perception is that a farming industry have a strong, well-structured social support network. But it's not the case for many farmers, and for many of them, as we know, work long hours, work alone.
There's nowhere to go now. There's no pubs, there's no social, there's nothing left for us to go to. You know, we have the rugby club, Newton Stewart Rugby Club, to Blandick, which is just a few miles up the road, which I was involved with, or still am involved with, to a little, really now as a fan, as a person that goes and watches and supports the guys. But if it wasn't for that, we'd have nothing left. And I mean, our village, there were four pubs within a mile of the centre, now there's none. So you can't go and meet up with your pals that easily. And there is no taxi service. So you're relying upon somebody giving you a lift because you can't drink and drive. There are very few facilities available, certainly in the West Coast. Maybe a bit slightly different in the East, and if you live nearer a town, fair enough. But it's getting together with your pals, it's really difficult. It's really challenging to get together. Occasionally there'll be parties you could go to. And actually, we had a discussion group, the Mackers Milkmen, for a long time. It was pretty active for a long time. And it was great fun. And I don't see those people nearly enough, because when we get together, we've all got a common cause and we have a right good laugh. We've got stuff to learn about dairy farming, maybe, but between us, actually, we just about know it all. So it's actually about getting together. So I really need to see about starting or getting that moving again, because we go on an annual trip and that was great fun. It probably nearly killed us, mind you, a booze that we took, but we're older now, so maybe we'll be a wee bit wiser. It's really difficult to get that social life at times. And that is the same for the people that work for me.
Yeah, and what is your advice to farmers who are feeling isolated?
Yeah, I mean, I hear lots of people say, oh, no, there's lots of help out there if you've gone to, well, Farmstrong, Rosabi, all these sort of regular places. But reaching out to a friend, trying to be part of an organisation, whether that be, if you're younger, the Young Farmers, or, I don't know, the Rugby Club at Newton Stewart, for me, is a great place. Try to have, I guess, a hobby and reach out to those. I try and make some friends, basically, because friendship sorts it. Friendship helps greatly.
You've come across today as being very reflective, and we've spoken about your grandfather and your father and how the business has been built up and how much work has gone into achieving what you've got today. But what advice would you give your younger self, knowing what you know?
It's difficult to answer, because I really look back and I always try and look for, I know you say I'm reflective, I'm usually reflective. I am. That would infer that I made lots of mistakes, or I want to change something about what I've done, and I'm not a great person for, I generally just accept how it's been, and you hate to move forward and look forward rather than back. I suppose I would say I would maybe looked after myself a bit better, partied a bit less, perhaps.
How do you define happiness, and have you found it?
Absolutely not. When I did my Harvest of Growth, we had to do a goal triangle. And everybody had these, what do they call them, BHAGs, big, audacious, hairy goals. And so they're all setting these huge, big financial targets, and they're going to be doing this and they're going to be doing that. And mine was simply to find contentment. And I realised that that was beyond audacious and extremely challenging to do. So what I probably found, or what I understand is important now, is purpose and meaningful progress, as I said earlier. And those will give me little horizons of happiness, and they'll keep my perspective. And in that goal triangle, it said I wanted to be successful in family and business. It's easy to be successful in one. It is not easy to be successful in both. How many multimillionaire entrepreneurs do you meet that are on their fifth wife? Or how many successful family men have done nothing in business because they spent all their time with their family? I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, and that maybe made them happy, but it's not for me. I want to be successful in both family and business. So that's the challenge. That's the audacious goal.
You've used that word purpose, and that brings us nicely back to the start of our conversation, and that's set very clearly out on your website, that sense of purpose. It's the first thing you read when I went to the website. That's the first thing I read about your quote about purpose.
Yeah. Oh, we're going and I are both very clear. Yeah, I think we're both clear on that, you know.
Finally, and just to sort of round things off, what advice would you give to the next generation of farmers?
Do not think you can be successful without absolute hard work and determination. You're not entitled to your success. Anybody who tells you it can be done without hard work doesn't know how to be successful. So expect to work hard. By all means, play hard. And if you work hard, you need to look after your body and your brain to allow you to be optimal at that.
We hope you enjoyed today's blether and it has provided some inspiration for your own well-being. One small step can make a big impact. Find something that works for you. To read our latest stories and news, download our resources and tools, or connect with Farmstrong Scotland, visit our website, allthews.farmstrongscotland.org.uk, or follow us on social media.